Chapter 29. Homecoming. The journey into the Westwood that had taken him perhaps half a dozen strides or so in the wolf dream, out of the mountains and across the sandhills, lasted 3 long days on horses. The Aiel had no trouble keeping up afoot, but then the animals themselves could not manage much speed, with the land mostly up and down as it was. Theron's wounds itched fiercely, healing. Fael's ointment seemed to be working. It was a quiet journey, by and large, broken more often by the bark of a hunting fox or the echoing cry of a hawk than by anyone speaking. At least they saw no more ravens. More than once he thought Fael was about to bring her mare over close to him, about to say something, but each time she restrained herself. He was glad of it. He wanted to talk to her more than anything, but what if he found himself making up with her? He berated himself for wanting to. She had tricked Loyal, tricked him. She was going to make everything worse, make it harder. He wished he could kiss her again. He wished she would decide she had had her fill of him and go. Why did she have to be so stubborn? She and the 2 Aiel women kept to themselves, Bane and Chiad, striding along on either side of Swallow when one or the other was not ranging ahead. Sometimes the 3 of them murmured softly among themselves, after which they avoided looking at him so pointedly that they might as well have thrown rocks. Loyal rode with them at Perrin's request, though the situation obviously upset him no end. Loyal's ears twitched as if he wished he had never heard of humans. Gaul seemed to find the entire thing vastly amusing. Whenever Perrin looked at him, he wore an inward grin. For himself, Perrin traveled wrapped in worry and kept his strung bow across the tall pommel of his saddle. Did this man called Slayer rove the 2 rivers only in the wolf dream? Or was he in the waking world, too? Perrin suspected the latter, and that Slayer was the one who had shot the hawk for no reason. It was another complication he could do without, on top of the Children of the Light. His family lived on a sprawling farm more than half a day beyond Emmonsfield, almost to the Waterwood. His father and mother, his sisters, his baby brother. Patrum would be 9 now, no doubt objecting more strenuously than ever to being called the baby. Dessel, a plump 12, and Adora, 16, probably ready to braid her hair. Uncle Edward, his Da's brother, and Aunt Magda, stout and looking nearly alike, and their children. Aunt Nian, who visited Uncle Carlin's grave every morning, and their children, and great Aunt Eelson, who had never married, with her sharp nose and sharper eye for discovering what everyone for miles around was up to. Once apprenticed to Master Luhan, he had seen them only on feast days. The distance was too great for casual travel, and there had always been work to do. If the White Cloaks hunted for Ebaras, they were easy to find. They were his responsibility, not this Slayer. He could only do so much. Protect his family and Fael. That was first. Then came the village, and the wolves, and this Slayer last. One man could not manage everything. The Westwood grew on stony soil, broken by bramble-covered outcrops, a hard, thickly treed land, with few farms or paths. He had wandered these heavy woods as a boy, alone or with Matt and Rand, hunting with bow or sling, setting snares for rabbits, or simply roaming for the sake of roaming. Bushy-tailed squirrels chittering in the trees, speckled thrushes warbling on branches imitated by black-winged mockers, blue-blacked quail bursting up out of the brush in front of the travelers, all spoke to him of home. The very smell of the dirt the horse's hooves turned was a recognition. He could have headed straight for Emmons Field, but instead he angled more northward through the forest, finally crossing the wide, rough track called the Quarry Road, as the sun slanted down toward the treetops. Why Quarry Road, no one in the 2 rivers knew. And it scarcely looked a road at all, only a weedy stretch that you did not even notice was bare of trees until you saw the overgrown ruts from generations of wagons and carts. Sometimes shards of old pavement worked their way to the surface. Perhaps it had led to a quarry from an Etherin. The farm Perrin sought lay not far from the road, beyond rows of apple and pear trees where fruit was setting. He smelled the farm before he saw it. the smell of char, not new. Yet a full year would not soften that smell. He reined in at the edge of the trees and sat staring before he made himself ride into what had been the Althor farm, the pack horse trailing behind his dun. Only the stone-walled sheep pen still stood, railed gate open and hanging by one hinge. The soot-blackened chimney cast a slanting shadow across the tumbled, burned beams of the farmhouse. The barn and the tobacco-curing shed were only ashes. Weeds choked the tobacco field and the vegetable garden, and the garden had a trampled look. Most of what was not sawleaf or feather top lay broken and brown. He did not even think of knocking an arrow. The fire was weeks old, the burned wood slicked and dulled by past rains. Choke vine needed nearly a month to grow that tall. It had even enveloped the plow and harrow lying beside the field. Rust showed under the pale, narrow leaves. The Aiel searched carefully, though, spears ready and eyes wary, quartering the ground and poking through the ashes. When Bane clambered out of the ruins of the house, she looked at Perrin and shook her head. At least Tamal Thor had not died in there.
They know, Rand. You should have come.
It was very nearly more than he could do to stop from putting Stepper to a gallop, keeping him there all the way to his family's farm. Trying to, at least. Even Stepper would fall dead before he ran that far. Maybe this was Trolloc work. If it was Trolloc's, maybe his family was still working their farm, still safe. He drew a deep breath, but the char obliterated any other smell. Gaul stopped beside him. Whoever did this is long gone. They killed some of the sheep and scattered the rest. Someone came later to gather the flock and drive it off north. Two men, I think, but the tracks are too old to be sure.
Is there any clue to who did it?
Gaul shook his head. It could have been Trolloc's. Strange to wish for a thing like that, and foolish. The White Cloaks knew his name, and they knew Rand's as well, it seemed.
They know my name.
He looked at the ashes of the Althor farmhouse, and Stepper moved as the reins trembled in his hands. Loyal had dismounted at the edge of the fruit trees, but his head was still in the branches. Fael rode toward Perrin, studying his face, her mare stepping delicately.
Do you know the people who lived here?
Rand and his father.
Oh, I thought it might be.
The relief and sympathy in her voice were enough to finish the sentence.
Does your family live near here?
No, he said curtly, and she recoiled as if slapped. But she still watched him, waiting. What did he have to do to drive her away? More than he could bring himself to, if he had not managed it already. The shadows were growing longer, the sun sitting on the treetops. He reined Stepper around, rudely turning his back on her.
Gaul, we will have to camp close by tonight. I want to start early in the morning.
He sneaked a glance over his shoulder. Fael was riding back to Loyal, sitting stiff in her saddle.
In Emmon's field, they will know
where the White Cloaks were, so he could turn himself in before they hurt his family. If his family was all right. If the farm where he had been born was not already like this. No, he had to be in time to stop that.
They'll know how things are.
Early, then.
Gaul hesitated.
You will not drive her off.
That one is almost far to rise my. And if a maiden loves you, you cannot escape her, however hard you run.
You let me worry about Fael.
He softened his voice. It was not Gaul he wanted to be rid of.
Very early,
while Fael is still asleep. Both camps beneath the apple trees were quiet that night. Several times one or the other of the Aiel women stood, staring toward the small fire where he and Gaul sat, but an owl hooting and the horses stamping were the only sounds. Perrin could not sleep, and it was still an hour short of first light, with the full moon setting, when he and Gaul slipped away, the Aiel silent in his soft boots and the horse's hooves making little more noise.
Bane or maybe Chiad watched them go. He could not tell which, but she did not wake Fael, and he was grateful. The sun had climbed well up by the time they came out of the Westwood a little below the village, amid cart tracks and paths, most bordered by hedges or low rough stone walls. Smoke made feathery gray plumes above farmhouse chimneys, goodwives doing the morning's baking by the smell. Men dotted the fields of tobacco or barley, and boys watched flocks of black-faced sheep in the pastures. Some people took note of their passing, but Perrin kept Stepper at a fast walk and hoped none were close enough to recognize him, or wonder at the strangeness of Gaul's clothes, or his spears. People would be out and about in Emmon's field, too, so he circled around to the east, wide of the village, wide of the hard-packed dirt streets, and thatched roofs clustered around the green, where the winespring itself gushed from a stone outcrop with enough force to knock a man down, and gave birth to the winespring water. The damage he remembered from winter night a year gone, the burned houses and charred roofs, were all rebuilt and repaired. The Trollocs might as well never have come back then. He prayed no one would have to live through that again. The Winespring Inn stood practically at the eastern end of Emmons Field, between the stout wooden wagon bridge across the rushing Winespring water, and a huge old stone foundation with a great oak growing up through the middle of it. Tables beneath the thick branches were where folk sat of a fine afternoon and watched the play at bowls. At this hour of the morning, the tables were empty, of course. There were only a few houses farther east. The inn itself was River Rock on the first floor, with a whitewashed second story jutting out all the way around, and a dozen chimneys rising above a glittering red tile roof, the only tile roof for miles. Tying Stepper and the pack horse to a hitch post near the kitchen door, Perrin glanced at the thatch-roofed stable. He could hear men working in there, probably Hugh and Tad. Mucking out the stalls while Master Alvear kept the big Durin team he rented out for heavy hauling. There were sounds from the other side of the inn, too. The murmur of voices on the green, geese honking, the rumble of a wagon. What was on the horses he left. This would be a short stop. He motioned for Gaul to follow and hurried inside, carrying his bow, before either stableman could come out. The kitchen was empty, both iron stoves and all but one fireplace cold, though the smell of baking still hung in the air. Bread and honey cakes. The inn seldom had guests except when merchants came down from Berlon to buy wool or tobacco, or a monthly peddler when snow had not made the road impassable, and the village folk, who might come for a drink or a meal later in the day, would all be hard at work at their own homes now. Someone might be there, though, so Perrin tiptoed along the short hallway leading from the kitchen to the common room and cracked the door to peek inside. He had seen that square room 1,000 times, with its fireplace of river stones stretching half the room's length, the lintel as high as a man's shoulder. Master Alvear's polished tobacco canister and prized clock sitting on the mantel. It all seemed smaller than it had, somehow. The tall-backed chairs in front of the fireplace were where the village council met. Brandelwyn Alvear's books sat on a shelf opposite the fireplace. Once Perrin had been unable to imagine more books in one place than those few dozen, mostly worn volumes. And casks of ale and wine lined another wall. Scratch, the inn's yellow cat, sprawled asleep as usual atop one. Except for Branalvir himself and his wife, Marin, in long white aprons, polishing the inn's silver and pewter at one of the tables, the common room stood empty. Master Alvear was a wide, round man, with a sparse fringe of gray hair. Mistress Alvear was slender and motherly, her thick graying braid pulled over one shoulder. She smelled of baking, and under that, of roses. Perrin remembered them as smiling people, but both looked intent now, and the mayor wore a frown that surely had nothing to do with the silver cup in his hands.
Master Alvear? He pushed open the door and went in. Mistress Alvear? It is Perrin.
They sprang to their feet, knocking their chairs over and making Scratch jump. Mistress Alvear clapped her hands to her mouth. She and her husband gaped as much at him as they did at Gaul. It was enough to make Perrin shift his bow awkwardly from hand to hand. Especially when Bran hurried to one of the front windows.
He moved with surprising lightness for a man of his bulk, and twitched the summer curtains aside to peer out as though for more Aiel outside.
Perrin?
Mistress Alvier murmured disbelievingly.
It is you. I almost didn't know you. With that beard and your cheek. Were you? Is Egwene with you?
Perrin touched the half-healed slash across his cheek self-consciously, wishing he had cleaned up or at least left the bow and axe in the kitchen. He had not considered how his appearance might frighten them. No, this has nothing to do with her. She is safe. Safer on her way back to Tar Valon, perhaps, than if still in Tyr with Rand, but safe in either case. He supposed he had to give Egwene's mother something more than that bald statement.
Mistress Alvier, Egwene is studying to be Aes Sedai. Nynaeve, too.
I know,
she said quietly, touching the pocket on her apron.
I have 3 letters from her in Tar Valon. From what she writes, she sent more, and Nynaeve at least 1, but only 3 of Egwene's have reached us. She tells something of her training, which I must say sounds very hard.
It is what she wants.
3 letters? Guilt made him shrug uncomfortably. He had not written a letter to anyone, not since the notes he had left for his family and Master Luhan the night Moraine took him away from Emmonsfield. Not 1.
So it seems, though not what I had envisioned for her. It isn't something I can tell many people about now, is it? She says she's made friends anyway. Nice girls by the sound of them. Elaine and Min. Do you know them?
We have met. I think you could call them nice girls.
How much had Egwene told in those letters? Not much, evidently. Let Mistress Alvier think what she would. He had no intention of worrying her over things she could do nothing about. What was past was past. Egwene was safe enough now. Abruptly realizing that Gaul was just standing there, he made hasty introductions. Bran blinked when Gaul was named Aiel, and frowned at his spears and the black veil hanging down his chest from his shufa. But his wife merely said,
Be welcome to Emmonsfield, Master Gaul, and to the Wine Spring Inn.
May you always have water and shade, roof mistress, Gaul said formally, bowing to her. I ask leave to defend your roof and hold.
She barely hesitated before replying, as if that were exactly what she was used to hearing.
A gracious offer, but you must allow me to decide when it is needed.
As you say, roof mistress, your honor is mine.
From under his coat, Gaul produced a gold salt cellar, a small bowl balanced on the back of a cunningly made lion, and extended it to her.
I offer this small guest gift to your roof.
Maren Alvier made over it, as she would have any gift, hardly showing her shock. Perrin doubted there was a piece to equal it in the whole 2 rivers, certainly not in gold. There was little enough gold coin in the 2 rivers, much less gold ornaments. He hoped she never found out it had been looted from the Stone of Tyr. At least, he would have wagered that it had.
My boy, Bran said. Perhaps I should be saying, welcome home. But why did you return?
I heard about the white cloaks, sir, Perrin replied simply.
The mayor and his wife shared somber looks, and Bran said,
Again, why did you return? You cannot stop anything, my boy, or change anything. Best that you go. If you don't have a horse, I will give you one. If you do, climb back in your saddle and ride north. I thought the white cloaks were guarding Tarin Ferry. Did they give you that decoration on your face?
No, it...
Then it doesn't matter. If you got past them coming in, you can get past them to leave. Their main camp is up at Watch Hill, but their patrols can be anywhere. Do it, my boy.
Don't wait, Perrin,
Mistress Alvier added quietly, but firmly, in that voice that usually ended with people doing as she said.
Not even an hour. I'll make you a bundle to take with you. Some fresh bread and cheese, some ham and roast beef, pickles. You must go, Perrin.
I cannot. You know they are after me, or you'd not want me to go.
And they had not commented on his eyes, even to ask if he was ill. Mistress Alvier had barely been surprised. They knew. If I give myself up, I can stop some of it. I can keep my family.
He jumped as the hall door banged open to admit Fail, followed by Bane and Chiad. Master Alvir ran a hand over his bald head. Even taking in the Aiel women's garb and obviously identifying them with Gaul, he only seemed a little bemused that they were women. Mainly, he looked irritated at the intrusion. Scratch sat up to stare suspiciously at all these strangers. Perrin wondered whether the cat considered him one as well. He wondered how they had found him, too, and where Loyal was. Anything to avoid wondering how he was going to manage Fail now. She gave him little time to ponder, planting herself in front of him with fists on hips. Somehow she managed that trick that women had, making herself seem taller through pure quivering outrage.
Give yourself up! Give yourself up! Have you been planning this from the start? You have, haven't you? You utter idiot! Your brain is frozen solid, Perrin Ebarra. It was nothing but muscle and hair to begin, but now it isn't even that. If White Cloaks are hunting you, they will hang you if you surrender to them. Why should they want you?
Because I killed White Cloaks. Looking down at her, he ignored Mistress Alvir's gasp. Those the night I met you, and two before that. They know about those two, Fail, and they think I'm a dark friend.
She would learn that much soon enough. Brought to the point of it, he might have told her why, had they been alone. At least two White Cloaks, Jefram Bornhald and Jarrett Byer, suspected something of his connection with wolves. Not nearly all, but for them the little was enough. A man who ran with wolves had to be a dark friend. Maybe one or both was with the White Cloaks here. They believe it for true.
You are no more a dark friend than I, she whispered harshly. The sun could be a dark friend first.
It makes no difference, Fail. I have to do what I have to do.
You addle-brained lummox! You don't have to do any such crackpate thing. You goose-brain! If you try it, I'll hang you myself.
Perrin, Mistress Alvir said quietly, would you introduce me to this young woman who thinks so highly of you?
Fail's face went bright red when she realized she had been ignoring Master and Mistress Alvir, and she began making elaborate curtsies and offered flowery apologies. Bane and Chiad did, as Gaul had, asking leave to defend Mistress Alvir's roof and giving her a small golden bowl, worked in leaves and an ornate silver pepper mill, bigger than Perrin's two fists, topped by some fanciful creature, half horse, half fish. Bran Alvir stared and frowned and rubbed his head and muttered to himself. Perrin caught the word Aiel more than once in an incredulous tone. The mayor kept glancing at the windows, too. Not wondering about more Aiel, he had been surprised to learn Gaul was Aiel. Maybe he was worried about White Cloaks. Marn Alvir, on the other hand, took it all in stride, treating Fail and Bane and Chiad the same as any other young women travelers who came to the inn, commiserating with them over how tiring travel was, complimenting Fail on her riding dress, dark blue silk today, and telling the Aiel women how she admired the color and sheen of their hair. Perrin suspected that Bane and Chiad, at least, did not know quite what to make of her. But in short order, with a sort of calm motherly firmness, she had all three women settled at a table with damp towels to wipe journey dust from hands and faces, sipping tea she poured from a large red-striped pot he remembered well. It might have been amusing seeing those fierce women, he certainly included Fail, suddenly eager to assure Mistress Alvir that they were more than comfortable. Was there nothing they could do to help? She was doing too much, all of them wide-eyed as children, with a child's chance of resisting her. It would have been amusing if she had not included himself and Gaul, sweeping them just as firmly to the table, insisting on clean hands and clean faces before they got a cup of tea. Gaul wore a small grin the whole time. Aiel had a strange sense of humor. Surprisingly, she never glanced at his bow or axe, or the Aiel's weapons. People seldom carried even a bow in the Two Rivers, and she always insisted such be set aside before anyone took a place at one of her tables. Always. But she just ignored them now. Another surprise came when Bran placed a silver cup of apple brandy at Perrin's elbow. Not the small tot that men usually drank at the inn, barely enough to cover the last joint of the thumb,
but half full. When he had left, he would have been offered cider, if not milk, or perhaps well-watered wine, a half cup with a meal or a full one on a feast day. It was gratifying to be recognized as a grown man, but he only held it. He was used to wine now, but he seldom drank anything stronger.
Perrin, the mayor said as he took a chair beside his wife, no one believes you a dark friend. No one with any sense. There is no reason for you to let yourself be hanged.
Fael nodded in fierce agreement, but Perrin ignored her.
I won't be turned aside, Master Alvear. The White Cloaks want me, and if they do not get me, they might turn to the next Abara they can find. White Cloaks don't need much to decide somebody is guilty. They are not pleasant people.
We know,
Mr. Salvier said softly. Her husband stared at his hands on the table.
Perrin, your family is gone.
Gone? You mean the farm is burned already? Perrin's fist tightened around the silver cup.
I hoped I was in time. I should have known better, I suppose. Too long before I heard. Maybe I can help my Da and Uncle Eward rebuild. Who are they staying with? I want to see them first, at least.
Bran grimaced, and his wife stroked his shoulder comfortingly. But strangely, her eyes stayed on Perrin, all sadness and comfort.
They are dead, my boy, Bran said in a rush. Dead? No. They can't be.
Perrin frowned as wetness suddenly slopped over his hand, stared at the crumpled cup as though wondering where it had come from.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
He pulled at the flattened silver, trying to force it back out with his fingers. That would not work. Of course not. Very carefully, he put the ruined cup in the middle of the table.
I will replace it. I can.
He wiped his hand on his coat and suddenly found he was caressing the axe hanging at his belt. Why was everyone looking at him so oddly?
Are you sure?
His voice sounded far away.
Adora and Dazelle. Pate? My mother?
All of them, Bran told him. Your aunts and uncles, too. And your cousins. Everybody on the farm. I helped bury them, my boy. On that low hill, the one with the apple trees.
Perrin stuck his thumb in his mouth. Fool thing to do, cutting himself on his own axe.
My mother likes apple blossoms. The White Cloaks. Why would they? Burn me, Pate was only 9. The girls.
His voice was very flat. He thought he should have had some emotion in those words. Some emotion. It was Trollocs, Mr. Salvier said quickly.
They have come back, Perrin. Not the way they did when you went away. Not attacking the village, but out in the countryside. Most farms without close neighbors have been abandoned. No one goes outside at night, even near to the village. It is the same down to Devon Ride and up to Watch Hill. Maybe to Tarin Ferry. The White Cloaks, bad as they are our only real protection. They've saved 2 families that I know of when Trollocs attack their farms.
I wished. I hoped.
He could not quite remember what it was he had wished. Something about Trollocs. He did not want to remember. The White Cloaks protecting the 2 rivers? It was almost enough to make him laugh.
Rand's father. Tam's farm. Was that Trollocs too?
Mistress Alvear opened her mouth, but Bran cut her off.
He deserves the truth, Morin. That was White Cloak's Perrin. That and the Cawthon place.
Matt's people too. Rand's and Matt's and mine. Strange. He sounded as if he were talking about whether it might rain.
Are they dead too? No, my boy. No, Abel and Tam are hiding in the Westwood somewhere. And Matt's mothers and sisters, they're alive, too.
Hiding?
There is no need to go into that,
Mr. Salvier said briskly. Bran,
Bring him another cup of brandy. And you drink this one, Perrin.
Her husband sat where he was, but she only frowned at him and went on.
I would offer you a bed, but it isn't safe. Some people are like as not to run off hunting for Lord Bornhold if they find out you are here. Eowyn Conger and Harry Copland fawn after the White Cloaks like heel hounds, eager to please and name names. And Sen Bui isn't much better. And Whit Conger will carry tales, too, if Daze doesn't stop him. She is the wisdom now. Perrin, it is best for you to go, believe me.
Perrin shook his head slowly. It was too much to take in. Daze Conger, the wisdom? The woman was like a bull. White Cloaks protecting Emmons Field.
Harry and Edward and Whit cooperating?
Not much more could be expected from Congers or Coplins, but Sen Bui was on the village council. Lord Bornhold. So Jeffrey Bornhold was there. Fayil was watching him, her eyes large and moist. Why should she be on the edge of tears?
There is more, Brandelwyn Alvear, Gaul said. Your face says so.
There is, Bran agreed. No, Morin,
he added firmly when she gave a small shake of her head.
He deserves the truth, the whole truth.
She folded her hands with a sigh. Maren Alvear very nearly always got her way, except when Bran's face was set, as now, with his eyebrows drawn down hard as a plow.
What truth? Perrin asked.
His mother liked apple blossoms.
First off, Padan Fain is with the White Cloaks, Bran said. He calls himself Ordeeth now, and he won't answer to his own name at all, but it's him. Stare down his nose as he will.
He's a dark friend, Perrin said absently.
Adora and Dazelle always put apple blossoms in their hair in the spring. Admitted from his own mouth. He brought the Trollocs on winter night. Pate liked to climb in the apple trees. He would throw apples at you from the branches if you did not watch him.
Is he now? The mayor said grimly. Now that is interesting. He has some authority with the White Cloaks. The first we heard they were here was after they burned Tam's farm. That was Fane's work. He led the White Cloaks that did it. Tam feathered 4 or 5 of them with arrows before he made it to the woods. And he reached the Cawthin farm in the nick to stop them taking Abel. But they arrested Natty and the girls. And Harl Luhan and Alsbet too. I think Fane might have hung them, except Lord Bornhold wouldn't allow it. Not that he let them go, either. They haven't been harmed, as far as I can discover, but they're being held in the White Cloak camp up at Watch Hill. For some reason, Fane has a hate for you, and Rand and Matt. He's offered 100 pieces of gold for anyone related to the three of you. 200 for Tam or Abel. And Lord Bornhold seems to have some interest in you, especially. When a White Cloak patrol comes here, he usually comes too, and asks questions about you.
Yes, Perrin said. Of course he would.
Perrin of the Two Rivers, who ran with wolves. Dark friend. Fane could have told him the rest.
Fane with the Children of the Light?
It was a distant thought. Better than thinking about Trollocs, though. He grimaced at his hands, made them be still on the table.
They protect you from the Trollocs.
Maren Alvear leaned toward him, frowning.
Perrin, we need the White Cloaks. Yes, they burned Tam's farm and Abel's. They've arrested people, and they stamp around as if they own everything they see. But Alsbet and Natty and the rest are unharmed. Only held. And that can be straightened out somehow. The dragon's fang has been scrawled on a few doors, but nobody except the Congers and Coplins pay any mind. And they're likely the ones who did the scrawling. Tam and Abel can stay in hiding until the White Cloaks go. They have to go sooner or later. But as long as there are Trollocs here, we do need them. Please understand, it isn't that we would not rather have you than them, but we need them, and we don't want them to hang you.
You call this being protected, Roof Mistress, Bane said. If you ask the lion to protect you from wolves, you have only chosen to end in one belly instead of another. Can you not protect yourselves? Chiad added. I have seen Perrin fight, and Matt Cawthon and Randall Thor. They are the same blood as you.
Bran sighed heavily.
We are farmers, simple people. Lord Luke talks of organizing men to fight the Trollocs, but that means leaving your family unprotected while you go off with him. And no one much likes that idea.
Perrin was confused. Who was Lord Luke? He asked as much, and Mistress Alvear answered.
He came about the time the White Cloaks did. He's a hunter of the Horn. You know the story, the great hunt of the Horn? Lord Luke thinks the Horn of Valyr is somewhere in the mountains of mist above the two rivers. But he gave over his hunt because of our problems. Lord Luke is a great gentleman with the finest manners.
Smoothing her hair, she gave an approving smile. Bran looked at her sideways and grunted sourly. Hunters of the Horn, Trollocs, White Cloaks. The two rivers hardly seemed the same place he had left.
Fael is a hunter of the Horn, too. Do you know this Lord Luke, Fael?
I have had enough, she announced.
Perrin frowned as she stood and came around the table to him. Seizing his head, she pulled his face into her midriff.
Your mother is dead, she said quietly. Your father is dead. Your sisters are dead and your brother. Your family is dead, and you cannot change it. Certainly not by dying yourself. Let yourself grieve. Don't hold it inside where it can fester.
He took her by the arms, meaning to move her, but for some reason his hands tightened till that grip was the only thing holding him up. It was only then that he realized he was crying, sobbing into her dress like a baby. What must she think of him? He opened his mouth to tell her he was all right, to apologize for breaking down, but what came out was,
I couldn't get here any faster. I couldn't.
He gritted his teeth to shut himself off.
I know, she murmured, stroking his hair for all the world as if he were a child. I know.
He wanted to stop, but the more she whispered understanding, the more he wept, as though her hands, soft on his head, were smoothing the tears out of him.